ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्. Chapter 9, verse 10.
Somebody
wants to hear you. 120. Maya dyakshena prakriti. Maya dyakshena prakriti. Suyate sacharacharam. Hetunanena kaunteya. Hetunanena kaunteya. Jagadvit parivartate.
Jagadvit parivartate.
Maya. Sandhi. Maya. Adyakshena. Prakritihi. Suyate. Sachara. Acharam. Sa. Chara. Acharam. Hetuna. Hetuna. Anena. Hetuna. Anena. Kaunteya. Jagat viparivartate. Okay. Whole discussion is still on prakriti. And now Bhagavan Krishna is talking about the relationship between the prakriti. Prakriti means the whole maya, the whole manifest creation and the cause for it as the maya. The relationship of that to himself as the Atman, as Brahman. So here he says, Maya, Krishna talking, Maya, by me. Here's the Laksharta, right? He's not talking about the form, the body, mind, sense organs form of Krishna. He's saying, by me, Ishwar, by me, Adyakshena, by me as that conscious presence, the overarching presence. So by me, by the one who, by the conscious presence, prakritihi, the prakriti, prakriti is the maya, the sattva rajas tamas maya that projects and resolves, you know, the projects and resolves this creation. That's the maya. Maya is also called prakriti. Okay. So, the prakriti, suyate, it creates, it produces, sachara, achara, this jagat. Jagat is understood from the next line. This creation, which is has chara, the sun means has, is together with. Chara, those things that move, and achara, things that don't move. You can take it as sentient and as insentient, but you can also take chara as on this earth, there are sentient things which are moving, like animals and human beings. And then there's insentient. There are sentient things that are not moving, like trees and plants. Right? They don't have legs to walk around. You can take it like moving and beings that are stationary and beings that are moving, or you can take it as sentient things and insentient things. You can take either way. This creation, but what they're trying to do is get a scope of this creation. So you can say this whole creation with all the sentient beings, both movable and immovable, all the living beings, movable and immovable, or this whole creation is sentient and unsentient. Okay. By that cause, Hetuna Anena, He Kaunteya, son of Kunti, is the name for Arjuna, He Arjuna. Because of that, by that means, Jagat Viparivartate. The Jagat goes on moving, goes on changing. Goes on changing, what they mean, it goes through all of its avastas. Avastas means its state of experience. We say for us as a jiva, we have three avastas: waking, dream, deep sleep. Those are our avastas, right? There's even a whole teaching prakriya around this. The three avastas: waking, dream, deep sleep. Right? Where's the fourth? You know, the tritiya, the fourth, is really the atman, which is the self of each one. You know, so the what is the who is the sakshi of these three states of experience? That's a teaching prakriya that we have. Here we're talking about when we say the jagat, the creation itself, goes through its modifications. What are the modifications? The sarva avastas, all of the states that it goes through, which are basically what? It comes into manifestation, it is sustained, and it resolves. And by jagat means everything, you know, that which is changing, that which is moving. But by jagat, here we mean everything that exists within duality. So when you say jagat, it means everything that is manifest, everything that exists within time and space. It's more than just when we say universe, say in the West we say universe. We think of that which we're perceiving with our eyes, that which we're, that shared reality which we perceive through our sense organs. But there's more to the universe than that. There's the subtle world, right? And anything that exists within duality, whether it be subtle or physical, right? Subtle or gross, all of this is the jagat. And when that jagat, if we think of that jagat as going through manifestation and unmanifest, from manifest condition to unmanifest condition, there's also the causal level, right? You have to have a causal level. Like, for instance, even you as a jiva, jiva means you as an individual, right? If I ask you to think of your kitchen, think of what your kitchen looks like, I'm pretty sure you weren't thinking of your kitchen until I asked you to do that. That means that kitchen knowledge, which was in unmanifest condition. Because you were able to draw it, but it wasn't manifest at that time. So like that, the whole jagat, the entire creation, has what we call an avyakta, an unmanifest state. And so in fact, when we say prakriti or maya, we're referring to that avyakta, that unmanifest condition. And the avyakta, the maya, manifests as, we could say, manifests from the total upadi, the whole maya upadi on a subtle level, we call Hiranyagarbha. The maya manifests as Ishwara. Ishwara is the maya upadi. When we say Ishwara, we just mean Brahman with the maya upadi. So Ishwara manifests on a subtle level as Hiranyagarbha, and on a manifest level, and a physical level, as Virat. So we have names for this, right? But if we just say Ishwara, really, we're talking about Brahman, the conscious being, which Krishna here is referring to as myself, with the maya upadi. And the maya upadi, maya means that sattva, rajas, and tamas, which is in its avyakta condition, unmanifest condition, which then manifests in terms of the jagat, in terms of the whole manifest creation. On a subtle level, we say Hiranyagarbha. That's the name. And on a physical level, we say Virat. And then you can call the whole thing as the maya upadi also. Right? This whole maya upadi, including Virat and Hiranyagarbha and Ishwara as the one who comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation. Right? So interesting, what if I say like this? Ishwara manifests Ishwara, which is Brahman with maya, right? Brahman, and taking maya into consideration, then if we say Ishwara, it means maya is being taken into consideration. Let me just give a little thing about that. If I say Ishwara, I'm talking about Brahman with this creative capacity that we call maya, that is responsible for manifesting the creation. So if I say Ishwara, I'm taking into account maya and this manifestation resolution. Ishwara, in fact, is nothing but Brahman, right? I could say Brahman, right, manifests as this creation. Brahman manifests as the creation and resolves. But the instance I say that Brahman manifests as this creation and resolves, but if I say that, I have to bring in maya, see? So I have to bring in maya because Brahman, as just pure being, pure consciousness, can't do anything. Brahman, which is Satchit Ananda, just consciousness, which is limitless existence, existence, which is consciousness. And that's all it is. It's existence. Brahman, yourself, is existence, which is consciousness, which is limitless. There's no qualities, there's no second thing. That's what Brahman is. One without a second, Advaita, It is only Satchit Ananda. That is the truth of the creation. That's it. Just Brahman. There is nothing here but Brahman. So I can say there is, right now I can say, there is nothing here but Brahman. There is only, all that is here is one non-dual Brahman. And I can be absolutely mean that. There is only Brahman here. There is only one non-dual Brahman. Now, that makes a lot of sense to us if I'm using the wave-ocean analogy, right? Because I can say, in reference to the wave-ocean, you know, that there is nothing here but water. There's nothing here but water. And everybody will go, that's true. There's nothing here but water. And because you'll recognize right away when I say that, there's nothing here but water, that even though there are waves and the whole ocean, even though those are there, there's nothing there but water. So in spite of there being waves and ocean, I can say that, yes, there are, you know, countless waves and there's an ocean, and we'll say, yes, there is. And I can say, and there's nothing there but water. You see that? I say, yes. And the reason for that is that there is no wave and ocean apart from the water. Right? It has no being apart from water. It's not there. The only thing that's there is water. That's why we say the waves and the ocean are mithya. The truth is the water. And so it's all right for me to say there's nothing there but water. You know? The waves and the existence of the waves and ocean are totally dependent on the water. So in the way I can say there is only Brahman here. Or I can say Ishwar is Brahman. Right? Because the only thing that here is Brahman. This creation is Brahman. Virat is Brahman. You know, Hiranyagarbha is Brahman. Ishwar is Brahman. And what about Maya? Well, but Maya is what's responsible for the manifestation of all of these names and forms, which itself are nothing but Brahman. So there's no way to, when we're talking about Maya or Prakriti, there's no way to remove it from Brahman. Right? But you can't, at the same time, you can't say that it does anything to Brahman. Because it itself has no being. You can't remove it from Brahman, but it's not here to be removed either. So that's why when they give the definition, you know, of Maya, they say Maya is mithya. You know what they say mithya is? Mithya we define as a dependent, that which is a dependent reality, like the waves are dependent on the water for their reality. Right? If you take the water away, there's no wave at all. If I take Brahman away, there's no creation. So yet, here we are talking about it. Here we are talking about the waves and the ocean. We're talking about this very complex, infinitely intelligent, or whatever you want to say, infinitely or infinite order of this manifest creation, and we say there's nothing here but Brahman. You know. So how do they define this Maya? What order of reality do they give to it? They say it is mithya. And mithya they define as that which is neither sat nor asat. It can't, that which can't be described as sat or asat, where sat means as something which is real. Sat means as something which actually exists. That's what we mean by sat. You can't say that Maya actually exists. You know? But you can't say that it doesn't exist either. That's asat. So you can't say that it really exists, and you can't say that it doesn't exist either, because here we are talking about it, describing it. It has an objective reality. It's a shared reality, so you can't say it's not here, but you can't say that it really exists either. That's why Swamiji now translates mithya in this way, that Sanskrit, if I were to put that in Sanskrit, it would be sat-asat, sat-asat-bhyam, anirvachaniya. That which cannot be, is not explicable, cannot be described as sat or asat. That's the definition of mithya. Swamiji now describes that mithya as a dependent reality. It means it depends for its reality on something else. Like the snake, for instance, depends on the rope. You know, or the pot depends upon the clay. It doesn't have any of its own being. But now, say you say that, and this is exactly what Krishna is saying here. He says, maya, by me, as the adhyaksha, means as the presiding deity, means as the, if I want to translate deity here, as the presiding conscious being. Now, if I say it in different words, as the presiding existence, which is consciousness. As the presiding Brahman, the one who is pure being consciousness. Being is consciousness. So, as the presiding consciousness, or as the presiding conscious being, right? This Prakritihi, which has, is both chara and achara, which is, which manifests, changes into this entire jagat, manifests as this entire jagat, and goes through the avastas of projection, of creation, sustenance, and dissolution, right? This whole creation, this creative activity, takes place because of me, by means of me. This is so important because when you look at this creation, which itself is in a moving according to an orderly process, right? There's an orderly process of unfoldment going on in this creation. There's an order, and we as human beings, we go on discovering the order. That's what science is about, all of the different sciences, all of our knowledge gathering is about that. It's a discovery of the order, the magnificent order, or the meaningfulness of this creation. So as we go on discovering that order and the creativity of the creation, or the manifest knowledge of the creation, it implies consciousness. It doesn't imply inertness. Right? If it implies inertness, then who wound up the clock type thing? If it's dead, if it's inert, you know, then what is the relation? What is the enlivening factor to this inert, unconscious creation? And so then there's a whole slew of arguments that can go on there. Well, the creation must have its own consciousness, and I'm another consciousness. It must be its own conscious being in order for it to be such a manifestation of intelligence. It's not itself going to be unconscious, or there must be some sort of a conscious figure in there somewhere. So there's all kinds of these kind of debates. They go on endlessly, these kind of debates. But now the question is, what Krishna is working with here is, I am the consciousness because of which this is. It's like saying, I am the water because of which the waves are. Without me, there is no manifestation. Without me, there is no creation. In fact, I am the very, what they call, nimitta and upadana karana of the creation. The upadana karana, actually we say vivarta upadana karana, is this. This is important. We say, when we're exploring the nature of Maya, when we're exploring the nature of this creation to find out what is really here, like for just on the most simple level, let me just say, well, what is this? Here's a table. Here's a form table. What is this table really? Well, really, it is wood. What kind of wood is it? Well, it's a special kind of wood, dark wood, that are very expensive wood, actually, some walnut, some special wood. I don't remember the name of it. Some very special wood. That's what's really here, right? So the content of the table is wood. That's what's here. That's the substance of it. But now the problem is, that's what we would say as lay people. But when you really go into the nature of the wood, and you get into the grain, into the cells, and into the molecules that make up the wood, and actually you start realizing, well, there's no more space here than there are molecules. You know, you start going in more and more and more to try to discover what is actually there, what is the substance. You get into trouble, more and more trouble, trying to actually find any type of substance here that we can call matter, or the thing that is actually here. Even in science, the thingness of anything quickly goes away, right? And yet, the thingness, the content, the substance that we search and search for keeps disappearing as we search. I'm not in Vedanta now. I'm just in science, just as a human being. As we try to discover substance, or what is, we want to answer the question, what is it that's actually here? What's filling the space? What is it? You actually can't find it, because everything that you are looking into is infinitely divisible. So everything is... All of the names and forms go on disappearing and disappearing and disappearing. And there's only one thing. There's only one thing that actually doesn't disappear, nor can it disappear. It won't disappear. It can't disappear. There's nothing you can do about it. Everything else that has name and form will disappear, can disappear, is bound by time. Even if you don't get rid of it, it'll get rid of itself. But what never changes, and which you can't reach, you can't get away from it, but you can't reach it either, is the very being, the very being itself, which is the truth of all of these things, no matter how far you dissect them or how much you bring them together. And that being, which remains as the constant, is also inclusive of you. In fact, that the being itself, which everything enjoys, like if you just use a simple example, if I take a clay pot and I squash it, I drop it on the ground, the clay pot no longer is, but the shards are. Nothing's happened to the being. The names and forms keep going, but the isness remains. No matter what you do, internally or externally, you can never touch isness. It is really what is here. You know, like if I started out saying, well, what is here is this dark wood. This table, what it really is dark wood. No, what it really is being. But really, when you get down to the bottom of it, what is left is being. Being itself is the noun. It is its own experience, and it is its own experience. It's not away from consciousness. Not consciousness of something. That may be a jump for you. Let's just stay at being itself. That being itself, which is there, is the very, what we call, vivarta upadana karana. It's the material cause. It's the material cause that never goes through any change. The names and forms keep going through changes. They appear and they disappear. They come and go. They transform from one thing into another, into another, into another. But what never comes and goes, and is always the bottom line of everything in this creation, is being. It is your bottom line. It is the one thing, being itself, that you can't change. And when we contemplate, if you try, just think about, when you contemplate, what are you doing? You're relaxing your body. Why? Well, the experience of relaxation is pleasurable. That's one thing. But the more you relax your body, the more the true substance of your body comes to the forefront. Which is what? Being. Your being. The more you relax your mind, don't put pressure on it, just be an inner friend. Let the mind just relax, let it move about. Don't judge it. Be a good friend, not a critic. To just allow it to be, you allow the mind to be. What comes to the forefront? Being. It's being comes to the forefront because you're not focusing on the changing subtle names and forms that are going on in the mind. So what comes to the forefront is what is actually there. What is actually there is being. Now, the being, that's what we say, being, what is actually there for you, is the being which is you. Is the being which is you inert, or is it conscious? Being is conscious. Being is consciousness. You can't have being and then consciousness over somewhere. The being itself is consciousness. And that being is steady, changeless, and the very substance of all experience. You experience that in meditation if you can kind of relax in reference to any analysis or any perception of the world. That is what it is. What fills all experience, all objects, subtle and gross, is conscious being, which is who? Which is me. Not this objectified body, mind, sense organs world. It's the conscious being, which is my very self. Okay? Now, that's the vivarta, that's me. In fact, it's what we call the vivarta upadana karana. I'm actually the substance of all my experience, but I don't go through any type of change. That's why you can break any object or any thought up into pieces, have them come and go, and what remains is this very a changeless presence of being, which is me. And I'm also, we say, the nimitta karana. Brahman is said to be the upadana karana, this material cause that itself doesn't go through in any change to become the creation, and the nimitta karana. When it says nimitta karana, the very cause of the creation, we bring in maya, the maya upadhi. The maya upadhi, this maya which is not away from Brahman because there's no place else to put it, and it has no being of its own. It's this maya upadhi which is the upadana karana, or called parinama upadana karana, that's responsible for this whole manifestation of all names and forms. But it being maya is mitya. It has no being, you know, apart from me, separate from me. So as a jiva, as an individual, you experience this relationship between the sat-chit, the conscious being, between Brahman, yourself as Atma. This relationship with maya you experience in terms of your own mind, your own imagination, your dreams. That's that maya, that limited maya, you know, that little piece of maya that you have. The relationship that the Atma, the self, has with that maya is exactly the same relation that Brahman has with the whole maya upadhi. That's why you can understand Brahman, the relationship between Brahman and the creation, if you can understand the relationship between the conscious being that you are and your little piece of maya, because maya is maya and consciousness is consciousness. There aren't two consciousnesses. The conscious being that you are is Brahman. But from the standpoint of the jiva, this all is maya. There's nothing here that is not maya. And so you as a jiva get your little piece of maya. Swamiji talks exactly about this in his commentary. So I read his commentary and I said, okay, see. He's saying it like this too. He says exactly like this, exactly what I'm saying. So you have to read this commentary. It's a long commentary. There's four or five pages, six pages, you know, on this verse. So he says exactly this thing, that the maya that you experience, say, if I ask you to imagine a meadow, that meadow imagination, right, comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you, nothing happens to you, but you are the very being, the sat-chit, conscious being of that meadow imagination. The meadow imagination is maya. That capacity you have, that capacity Brahman has in total. So it is that capacity that Brahman has that projects the entire creation as an infinite manifestation of knowledge. So here, Krishna says, he says, by me as the presiding deity. Presiding means the sat-chit, right? As the conscious being, by me as the conscious being. This prakriti, you know, with me, right? There, as its very cause, you know. This prakriti projects, creates suyate, it projects the jagat, the whole creation, composed of the moving and immovable, the sentient and insentient. They're just two terms meant to give you the entire scope of the creation, everything that exists in the creation. The prakriti does this. And it is because of this, you know, it is because of this means my relationship, my being, you know, that the Prakriti, as this Jagat, is able to go through these, all of its avastas, as Shankara says, sarva avastasu, all of its states of experience, the projection into the creation, the manifestation of the creation, the abiding of the creation, the resolution of the creation back into the maya, into the unmanifest, objective position. It goes on endlessly from beginningless time, manifesting and going into resolution, manifesting and going into resolution. There is no maya separate from me. I am its being. Right? Just like for you as an individual, you are the being of your mind. You are the being of your mind. Your mind has no being without you. But that's another important thing to realize, the satya-mitya relationship in reference to you and your body. What you need to realize for a person who's gaining self-knowledge, you have to be able to say, my mind, right, this mind, right, is the self. This mind is the Atma. Means that this the conscious being, which this mind enjoys. You can't say your mind doesn't enjoy consciousness or isn't have for its very self a conscious existent being, right? It does. Of course it does. Mm. This mind is me. Me. But this me, the me that I am, is totally free of this mind. That's satyamitya. This mind has no being apart from me, but I am totally free of it. This creation has no being. So Krishna says, this being, this entire creation has no being apart from me. I am its being. I am its self. But I am completely free of it. That is the satyamitya. So here, why that's so important is because, especially in the West or in kind of the modern, I don't know, things that the way that the West that the West or modern thinking has actually gotten away from this knowledge, from understanding this knowledge, is that some idea that there is a self to be, the mind needs to reach a self, attain a self, attain the self, reach the self, you know, experience the self. The mind feels I need to have an experience of myself. It's like the wave saying, I need to have an experience of the water, the Brahman water. You may have an experience of the Brahman water, you know, of the water which is infinite. I'm just the little water. I need to have an experience of the infinite water. Mm. At least there you can say, well, actually the wave does only take up a little bit of the water. There's a lot more water that, yeah. But here there's no such excuse. It's only a drishtanta. These illustrations, they all have limitation, you know, because they're an illustration. The Atma, the self, is free of time and space. It's not big, it's not small. It's one without a second. It doesn't have any boundaries, but it doesn't have any, there's nothing else there. Time and space come with the creation, not with the self. So there's no little self and big self. Oh, I'm just a little piece of Brahman. There is no piece. You are Brahman. You are Brahman. There's no big Brahman or little Brahman. There's no big Brahman of which the Atma is a little part. There's only one Brahman, and that Brahman you totally 100% are. But now say, you Brahman, you who are pure conscious being, with maya, you imagine a meadow. And then there's the Ishwara of the meadow, means the one from whom the whole meadow has come, who has a sense of I for the whole meadow, not for anything of in it. And then there's the little jivas, the little individuals in the meadow. And the little jiva, the little individual can say, oh, I'm just a part of the meadow, and I just enjoy a little piece of the consciousness. But the whole meadow enjoys a big piece of the consciousness. Well, consciousness doesn't have anything to do with big or small. The entire meadow and everything in it is manifest from that one non-dual consciousness. And the entire meadow and everything in it has no being apart from that one non-dual consciousness, which is free of size and shape. It has nothing to do with size and shape. It has no boundaries. It has doesn't have up or down or right or left, because its space belongs to the meadow. Space belongs to the creation. Space is an element. Right? If when you imagine the creation coming, you have to imagine manifesting. You have to imagine space, air, fire, water, earth, the five elements coming into manifestation with all of the elementals and all of the different change going on within that space and time that all belong to that creation. It doesn't belong to you, the conscious being. It belongs to Maya. And so you don't have a partial experience of consciousness. I'm a jiva, so I have a partial experience. You don't have a partial experience of consciousness. You are consciousness. There's no non-objectifiable consciousness. So the conscious being that you are is Brahman and is, in fact, Ishvara. So in the end, you need to be able to say, I am Ishvara. I am Ishvara. Not from the standpoint of the jiva, because the jiva, the individual, is part of Ishvara, part of the whole manifest creation. But you, the conscious being, are what is here. And Maya belongs to that conscious being, if you can even say the word belong, because it has no separate reality apart from Brahman. Right? But that Maya that manifests as the whole meadow or as the whole universe, right, has many parts within that manifestation. But who am I? Am I the manifestation that comes within the whole manifest creation, or am I the self? Am I the conscious being from whom the self, from whom the manifestation comes? You are the conscious being. All other experience without any exception comes and goes within that stable consciousness which you are. And so here, Krishna is just explaining, you know, this whole creation, you know, it depends on me for its being. All of everything that it is only because of me. If I were to remove me, that myself, it would not be here. That's the satya mitya. If I were to remove myself, it would not be there at all. Nothing would be there. Nothing would be left out that would be there. It would be completely gone. If I remove the rope from the snake, say I mistake a rope for a snake, it's got three or four bends in it, and it's an inch and a half in diameter. I remove that rope, it's not like the snake skin remains on the side, you know? It is 100% totally gone. So there is no Maya. There is nothing there without Brahman. But that which is there that we call Maya, that's why Swamiji sometimes give an etymology that they give, Ya Ma Iti Maya. That which is not, that is Maya. Ya Ma. That which is Ma Not, Ya Ma Iti. Thus, that is Maya. Sa Maya. That is Maya. But it's a tricky language. That's what that which is not. Because we experience it. That's why you can't say it is and you can't say it isn't. It is not. That's Maya. So it can't be categorized. There's no way to categorize Maya except to say that Maya is something that is there for Brahman. You know, is a what words can you use? Creative capacity of Brahman. Responsible. That is that which is totally dependent on Brahman for its being, is responsible for the manifestation and names and forms, just like your dream or your imagination. We have to use those drishtantas to make you understand that such a thing is. We use your own experience to show you what is Maya. Because this is Maya. This whole thing is Maya. There should be a drishtanta. There should be something in all of this Maya that we can understand, that can make us understand what is Maya. And that is dream, projection, imagination. You know, seeing a rope for a snake, or seeing a mother of pearl shell appears as silver in the distance, you know, on the sandy beach. You're looking in the distance and it's this thing is shining as though it's silver, but when you approach, you see a mother pearl. But you see a mother pearl there, not a piece of silver. That's another one they use. Mistaking him walking along the road at night, mistaking a post for a man. You know, that's another. Mirage water is another. These are the common examples that are used to make you appreciate what they mean by this word Maya. These drishtantas are helpful. And then they describe, then they say, all, they use these drishtantas, these illustrations, after having described it, as I've been describing it. Like this, and like this, and like this. You see, such a phenomenon is here in the world for you to understand what we're talking about in terms of the very nature of Maya as the material cause for the manifestation of the creation. And that is why, also, Swamiji calls Maya as the manifestation of knowledge. The manifestation of knowledge. Because if you say this whole infinite creation as Ishwara, as Ishwara is Brahman plus this Maya Upadi, what is that like? It is a manifestation of knowledge because the nature of Brahman is consciousness. Right? This adyaksha, the Maya adyakshena, by me, this presiding deity, you know, because of me, this conscious being, this entire creation manifests, but it manifests not away from and having for its very being conscious being. And that means this whole thing is known, this whole infinite creation is known as manifest knowledge. Manifest knowledge, I ask you to think of a meadow, to think of an ocean scene, to think of a favorite town. These are just all, what do? You are manifesting knowledge, and everything that you bring into manifestation is known. It is, and it is known while it is there. So look at the entire infinite creation as manifest knowledge. What does that mean? It is, and it is known. That's what we call Ishwara for the entire manifest creation. So here Krishna says, it is by me, because of me as this presiding deity, that this whole jagat, this whole creation comes into manifestation. It goes through all of its avastas, all of its states of being. It becomes manifest, it sustains and resolves, manifest, sustained, it sustained and resolves. All of that takes place in me. And then in the next verse, which we'll do next week, then he goes on to say, people who are mudaha, means they're deluded, because they don't have knowledge, it's not really a negative term, it's just they're deluded. They don't know me. They don't know me. Who is the one abiding in this body? They don't know me, the one who is here abiding in this body. Right? They don't know, not because they are ignorant of Param Bhavam, my true being. They take, because I'm here, abiding as the very self of this body, they take me to be this body. They don't know who I am. It's like for an Ajnani, the Ajnani will say, you know, I am this body and this body is me. Or a Jnani will say, you know, this body is me and I am free of this body. The Jnani will say, the Ajnani, the one who doesn't have knowledge, will say, this body is me and I am this body. If that's so, if this body dies, I die. If this body's sick, I'm sick. Same with the mind. The Ajnani will say, you know, this mind is me and I am this mind. The Jnani will say, this mind is me and I'm completely free of this mind. Right? That's satya mitya. So here Krishna is going on now to say, the ones who don't know, they don't know me, right? They don't know me. They take me to be a human being, you know, the one abiding in this body, you know. The one I, the one that, who's abiding in this body, they don't know my true nature, right? You know, my true nature as the one who is really the Lord of all beings. So we'll look at that next week. Let's take a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti
Shanti Shanti
Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
I was thinking about something. When I say I'm a conscious being, and I am my mind, and I am free of my mind,
mm-hmm.
and there's no size there. So if I expect some expanding sense of myself or being bigger than I am, what is it truly then?
There is a sense of expansion when your mind really relaxes. The mind itself is expanding, and so you feel that there's a sense of expansion there. But your self, consciousness, the conscious being, is free of any type of limitation to feel expansion or contraction.
Mm-hmm.
It itself, by its own nature, is completely free. So there's this kind of a subtle distinction, to, not even subtle distinction, yourself is unencumbered by expansion or contraction. It doesn't involve that. It's absolutely free as it is. But when your mind relaxes, and also when the mind itself focuses on the nature of itself, it itself has a sensation of expansion, because it is expanding. For the mind and the body and the world, there's expansion and contraction, there's relaxation and tension. But so there's two things to discern. One, well, not exactly like that, but one is the recognition of kind of the relaxing, expanding mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the recognition of the self, which doesn't involve expanding or contracting, but is its own state of limitlessness.
And that's the Brahman they're talking about. That's
Brahman.
The one with the total upadhi.
Brahman is the one that's free from any upadhi, but is the self of the whole upadhi.
So it's identical.
It is. It is you.
And you shouldn't expect anything more than that. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's a good question. You know, because people are expecting all kinds of things, like you're expecting an ultimate bliss experience. Not but that must be the ultimate bliss experience, where you think of it in terms of, now I'm happy, now I've been a little happier than I am right now, and I've been even happier than that. I've had kind of ecstatic experiences. The experience of Brahman must be one of this type of ecstasy that is beyond the charts.
Yeah, and you graduate to that.
Yeah. So those, actually, there are many different levels of bliss experiences that are brought about by conditions of the mind. But the self is not a fluctuating bliss experience, where sometimes it's more bliss and sometimes it's less bliss. But there is a very profound recognition that, in fact, compared to your own being, which is here right now, not some big thing that, you know, to experience, the very simple experience of your own being, there is, in fact, nothing more dear or desirable than that.
Mm.
And that's a recognition. That's a recognition. And it's not the recognition of some extreme state. It's the recognition of your own being, the how profound and dear your own being is. And you can even ask yourself, okay, now would I rather have me or this bliss experience? You know? I mean, it sounds like a silly question, but it's not, it's apples and oranges. these bliss experiences and the negative experiences, which of course we don't want, mm-hmm. are on one realm of reality that takes place within Maya, and they are, you know, heaven to hell experiences. So the highest heaven experience to the darkest hell experience and everything in between, all of this is offered to us within Maya, within duality, you know. And then there is the nature, my own nature. And that is what it is. I mean, we can't tell you what that is in comparison to something in the world, even though we try to. But we use all the words that we use are lakshanas. They're pointing to. They themselves can't contain, because all the words that we use are land upon something that exists within duality. But we use words like it is, like if I say it is absolutely peaceful, it is like a half smile on one of the deities, like a half smile.
Yeah, they all have that.
Yeah. So if you assume that half smile, it will take you to some sort of understanding of your own presence. But it's not a half smile, you know? And it's the shanti that's present even in ashanti. Ashanti means an agitation. It's the shanti that is there even in ashanti, the pervading shanti. You know, it is strong, it is stable. They're just words. The words have to somehow land. It is a sangha. It's not attached to anything. And so all these words are pointing. And the reason the words can land, can work, is because you are there. And say when we do a guided meditation, your own presence becomes more to the forefront. Because of the relaxation, and then the words are being used to kind of point to that which is, you know, available to be recognized.
And it's not more than that. I mean, you know, that you have to get these urges of it should be better or bigger.
Well, I would say like this. I know what you mean, because you're still looking at a. I would say like this. You're still looking at a shanti or a silence, these are all words we use, that has something to do with the vritti, with the thought, and not to you, who is the one illumining the thought. And when that one is recognized, all of these things go away. All these looking for something better, there is nothing better. Looking for some bigger bliss experience. Yeah, there's bigger bliss experiences, but that's not what I want. I want this. See what I mean? So when you're looking for bigger bliss experiences, something has to still click where I discover, you know, like in Rumi's...
That's a new one.
I'm teaching. I'll call you later. you know, in Rumi's and even St. John of the Cross, a lot of the Christian mystics and you know, and the Sufis, so many of them, they talk about the nature of the self as the beloved. I think that's a really good the beloved. I think it's a really good word, because that word is good for pointing to you when you recognize how beloved your being actually is. That except that there's nothing more, that there's nothing for you that is more loved than that. And okay, so then when you say, okay, there's nothing more loved than that, means that is the most dear then. Now, what is the most dear is never going to be something that is painful. It's not painful. What is most dear is not painful. But what words are we going to use for the most dear in terms of trying to point to the kind of the affect nature? I'm not talking about any kind of quality, but just about the nature of yourself that would be called the most dear or the beloved, the most dear, the beloved. Then you can sometimes in meditation, you can ask yourself, this is how I saw this anyway. In meditation, you ask yourself, why would I, this conscious being, the me, be called Ananda or the beloved? What about it? What makes me the beloved? What is it that makes that true? What is the most, what is beloved? And then you see, and you just see, you ask yourself, what is beloved? In my experience, what in this experience, meditative experience, when I'm just relaxing and just being with me, not trying to be on any bliss trip or anything, I'm just trying to be with myself. What is it that is most dear about me right now that I don't want ever to lose or don't want ever to change? That what is it that makes me that I'm most attached to? What is that? It's a really nice meditation.
I have a question. I think it's kind of related to what I was asking about, but more basic. You talked about this. You actually talked about it really thoroughly during the class. Consciousness. I wanted to ask a question about the use of consciousness of. But there really is no consciousness of. I have to remind myself of this at different points when I'm doing inquiry, because colloquially we say consciousness of, and we mean, by consciousness we mean the mind. We mean, or the sense organs, some object that is aware of another object. It's
that's right. Whenever you, and even when you do the drip drisha, the see or seeing differentiation, and you get done, you are conscious of your mind. That on, and that's what we call the sakshi. That really has to be given up in the end. But it works from the standpoint only of the upadhi. Mm-hmm. So even for the mind, you're aware of the mind. But if you get rid of the mind, there's no one aware of the mind. Mm-hmm. But because the mind is there, you know, it is known. But there's no one who's performing an act of knowing it. And then within duality, consciousness of, that's just how we use the language. I'm conscious of this, I see this, I know this. But that's all mind, sense organs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the mind can, in inquiry, fall into that very habitual groove, and then it's not working. You know, the analysis starts breaking down.
Right.
But I was thinking, consciousness of is, I don't know if this is what I'm kind of going to ask about. One way of saying that is that that's vritti jnanam, mm-hmm.
Consciousness of is vritti jnanam.
Yeah.
Because you have to have the duality there to have the of, right? So, in fact, at any given moment, and Swamiji does a nice thing in his, you all have this, you have a handout? You have the handout, don't you, for Swamiji's?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Swamiji does a nice thing, and I'll have to give it to you after class.
Which handout?
You know, what you have right there.
Oh, okay.
Swamiji's Gita Master. You have to be able to say, right now, I see, I'm seeing, and I don't see. Both are true. Because you can recognize right now that your conscious, the me, is not performing any act whatsoever. You're just simply there. You're not doing anything. And you're seeing. But the seeing requires the sense organs and the mind. Right? And it is you who are seeing, but from the standpoint of the sense organs and the mind, because the sense organs and mind have no being apart from consciousness. Mm-hmm. But without them, without that maya, there's no seeing. There's no seer seeing. But so both needs to be recognized. Like right now, your being is not doing anything. The me. You're just steady, simple. You're not an actor of any kind. So that you recognize, and you recognize that all you're also doing all of this. But do the doing all of this, you know, the engaging, all that we're doing, requires the upadhi. Upadi means the conditioning agent, what's going on within the maya.
In everyday language, we say, I'm conscious of what I know. I'm conscious of my knowledge. And so that's sort of one of the twofold, one aspect of the twofold nature, you could say, right? And then the other is, would be the absolute, which is that there is no consciousness of knowledge. Knowledge is consciousness. I mean, that's one way you could say it, right?
You want to, I think what you want to be able to say is, in terms of your experience right now, if you say knowledge is consciousness, that's the satyam mitya, right? The knowledge or the experience has for its being is nothing but consciousness. But your self-experience of consciousness right now, your being, the conscious being that you are, is not doing anything, changing, not performing any action whatsoever. It's not knowing anything, just you simply are. So that's aparoksha, that's self-evident. And then from the standpoint of maya, your sense organs, your mind, your sense organs, all of this that's going on, even your thoughts, say the thought flow, the whole thought flow is known, right? So you can say, oh, I'm conscious of my mind. But there's no one conscious of from the standpoint of the Atman. So you can say the mind is known because the self of the mind, from the self of the mind is consciousness. There's nothing there but consciousness. Or you can just talk from the standpoint of maya. I see you, I'm talking, I'm thinking. You know, all of this takes place within consciousness. You know, and there's that knower-known relationship. But the knower-known relationship, even from Ishwara's standpoint, is only from the standpoint of the maya, not from the standpoint of you. And both are discernible at any given moment. Any given moment of your experience.
I just wanted to make sure that it is okay to say at some point in the unfoldment there really is no consciousness of. I mean, implies too. And
consciousness of implies maya. Right? But you are not, you are consciousness. You are not a knower. Knowership requires maya. It requires mind and sense.
But is there a sense of knowledge there with that just consciousness, not of something, but just consciousness?
There's a sense of non-dual knowledge. It's the sense, maybe you can say like this, these words get a little confusing. If I say, and often I've unfolded this in sometimes unpopular way. It is known, it is known, it is known. Any experience you have, any thought in the mind, it is known. Any perception is known, any imagination is known. Anything that takes place within maya is known, right? If I get rid of the whole maya, all experience, the whole maya upadi, what is left is known. Is known is just a synonym. That phrase is a synonym for consciousness, for the aparoksha, self-effulgence. So your self, consciousness, is known, not in a subject-object relationship, but because it is consciousness, it is self-evident, self-shining. But it's not known as a subject in a subject-object relationship, but it's known because it's self-evident, it's consciousness. The example we use to try to help understand that is like the sun doesn't require another luminary to come in and light it up. It's self-luminous. It's self-shining. And so what's its own experience? It's its own light. That it doesn't need something to come in and light it up so it can be seen. It's its own luminosity. So like consciousness, like the consciousness doesn't need another consciousness to come in to illumine it, to make it known. You know, it doesn't need a mirror or anything. So you think, oh, in order for me to know that I am, I need a mirror. Because like, I'll say, in order for me to know what I look like, I need to have a mirror so that I can look and see myself. So then we think, well, in order for me to know what I look like as consciousness, I have to have a mind. I have to have some sort of a mirror to reflect me that, oh, that's what I look like, you know? But that's not true, because consciousness is the very thing that illumines the mirror. But consciousness is its own luminary. So there's no need for a second thing to come in and light it up, because it itself is the light.
That's why I like to think sometimes about the, just, you know, it's all language, but isness instead of consciousness, because
isness being.
It doesn't have the implications that we associate with being conscious of something. It just is isness.
Yeah. And, but then when you make that, when you think of being or isness, in your mind, that being has to become consciousness. But it's easier when we're, that the being itself is consciousness, not consciousness of something, which is what you're trying to avoid here. Being is, the being, the non-dual nature of being from subject to object is easier to understand when we're trying to understand that this creation is I am. You know, that I don't have to deal with I'm a conscious being and this isn't. This is the table's not a conscious being, I'm a conscious being. I don't have to deal with that. You know, I can say I am and it is equally. This is. We leave consciousness out for the time being.
But you know, the other day you, I don't know, somehow this word self-evident became more evident or something. And so, as a synonym for consciousness, so because existence is self-evident.
Yeah.
And so for me...
Well, that's nice, yeah.
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 Rather than saying existence, you know, consciousness, because I get a little tripped up with that, you know. Because
you say existence is self-evident.
Yeah.
That's the same as saying existence is consciousness.
It's the same, yeah, exactly. It's such it, right? So, yeah, so that...
Oh, it merges the two together.
Self-evident existence.
They are the same.
Well, because they are the same.
Yeah.
Consciousness is existence. Existence is consciousness. They can't be separate. Neither one is objectifiable. Like, you can't say, oh, look at this consciousness over here. I can say, look at the rug, look at the table, look at me. But I can't say, look at the consciousness or look at the existence. But consciousness, existence is, they're just not objects. They are, in fact, the pervasive substance, subject. Well, we don't want to use subject, because subject is subject and object. In the end, there's only one subject.
So all these
subject
words,
and object,
like,
are the same.
Like consciousness, you know, which is an English word and has a lot of other meanings and stuff. So really, what all these words are just trying to get you to do is see something.
Yeah, they're really all
obvious.
That's the teaching methodology.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all lakshanas, because all of the words, the immediate meaning of the word, the vacharta, is within duality. All language is only exists within duality. The objects of language is within duality. The teaching methodology has to do with using these words, because they're the words we have, in order to point to something which is actually there. If it wasn't there, there's nothing we could do. But conscious being, Satchidananda, the Brahman, is there to be recognized. And so now we have to use, because it's already present, we have to use words to make the student see this. And now, to use the words effectively, you have to use the word at the same time stripping off of the teaching methodology the limitations of the word. You know? And that's how you, that's why you use words juxtaposed against each other, like set, which is chit. Oops, there she goes. And who knows what she's got in her mouth. the set, the chit, right? There's all these prakriyas, all these different teaching methodologies are using words to take you to the recognition of yourself, which is there. If you weren't there, then the words, we couldn't do it.
Mm.
But since you are there, and you are self-evident, the words can kind of strip through the maya, the satyam mitya, and leave you with the satyam.
Mm.
And there's various teaching methodologies that we use over and over and over again in different ways.
Mm.
Can I ask you something? Just a follow up on what we talked about in the beginning of class in terms of this no qualities. Like timelessness is the nature of the self. Changelessness is the nature of the self. But actually, it is the self, because there's nothing else that is timeless or changeless. So then I was thinking in terms of like the elements, like water. Like sometimes when I say things, like, well, it's the nature of fire to be hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So then I was thinking, well, now like, does that mean it's a quality? Is hot a quality of fire, or is it its nature? Is wet a quality of water, or is this nature? You know, is movement a quality of wind, or is nature, is all pervasiveness a quality of space, or nature? I'm not quite sure what to say about it.
Well, we use fire and hotness to show something. Mm-hmm. Hotness as being the very svabhava.
Right.
Of the fire.
Yeah.
Like consciousness is the very nature of the Atma.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? This whole, once you start getting too much into substantive and adjective, then the Maya of it, it all starts falling apart.
Mm.
Like Maya will fall apart. The reason it falls apart is because really there is no substantive.
Fire.
Yeah, it all, as you start to analyze
that,
the only, you're left in the end with the only one vastu, and that is Brahman. Vastu means one thing, and that is Brahman.
Right.
Right? And so the substance attribute falls apart.
What was
that? No, go. So maybe, I think it's probably downstairs. It's Rob downstairs.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. He's building something. You know, he's building.
Yeah,
Do you hear the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the substantive adjective. That's a good question for Swamiji. We do have some of it on the...
Really?
Yeah, on the things, but...
Okay. I never thought about it before.
It gets into...
Don't get tired.
I think I've got to go to bed. Yeah. That's a good question, but... But it will resolve into Maya, you know, to where there's no real answer to it. But on a simple level, there's an answer. You know, like things have qualities, like a fire can be red or yellow, you know. And the qualities can help to differentiate one thing from another. Like, say you have all of these roses, but some roses are red, some are yellow, some are white. These are different qualities that can differentiate one object from another. Some cloth is rough, some cloth is still cloth, but it's rough or it's soft or it's like that.
Okay.